Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. From the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultural lands in southeast Alaska, we're exploring some of Alaska's sacred places. Some of these cultural spots on the map face serious development pressure. And for other places, there are agreements in place that keep them protected. We'll hear where some of these sacred places are and what efforts are underway to protect them. That's what's next, right after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell announced today that federal agencies plan to sign a memorandum of understanding. Jewell says the MOU will be formalized in the coming days to ensure tribal treaty rights are part of agency decision-making related to natural resources. She made the announcement before tribal leaders gathered in Washington, D.C. for the White House Tribal Nations Conference. Jewell linked the move to the Dakota Access Pipeline, which tribes across the country have joined with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in its fight against the project. The tribe says the pipeline threatens water and the environment. Jewell thanked leadership of the tribe and called for larger action.
I appreciate that the Army Corps, the Department of Justice, and the Interior Department have announced a pause while the Army thoroughly evaluates whether to reconsider any of the previous decisions made concerning that project and the Lake Oahe site near Standing Rock. But looking beyond the Dakota Access Pipeline, it's clear that there needs to be a conversation about something much larger than a single pipeline project. How a federal action impacts your land, your water, your sacred sites, your treaty rights, your sovereignty is relevant, it's important, and your voices are important.
The administration will also hold meetings with tribal leaders in October and November to examine tribal consultations on future major infrastructure projects. Today's event is President Obama's eighth and final Tribal Nations Conference. Representatives from the country's 567 federally recognized tribes were invited to take part to interact with government officials. The American Red Cross is helping residents of the Pine Ridge Reservation recover from weekend storm damage, South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Officials say nearly 20 homes were damaged in storms that brought strong winds to the region. Of the 18 homes that were damaged in the Pine Ridge Reservation community of Oglala in southwest South Dakota, most suffered minor roof and siding damage. But four homes were declared uninhabitable. The Red Cross is working with the residents of those homes to find them temporary lodging. Richard Smith with the local Red Cross office says officials will work with emergency management personnel with the Oglala Sioux Tribe to assess the situation. That will determine whether any other homes are damaged and what sort of help may be needed from local, state, and federal officials. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A bill introduced by Republican Arizona Senators John McCain and Jeff Flake would settle claims to water from the Colorado River made by the Hualapai Tribe, which reservation borders the southwestern rim of the Grand Canyon. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
The Hualapai Tribe Water Rights Settlement Act would allocate more than 1.3 billion gallons of water per year. It would allow for the construction of a 70-mile pipeline from Diamond Creek on the Colorado River to Peach Springs and the tribe-owned Grand Canyon West Resort. Hualapai Chairman Damon Clark told the Senate Indian Affairs Committee the tribe has limited and declining water resources and needs access to the river to boost employment and tourism.
We're proud of the fact that the tribe is moving forward towards achieving full employment for our members and economic self-sufficiency, but the severe lack of water on the reservation is a major obstacle in reaching these goals. Colorado River is the only feasible supply for satisfying long-term water needs of our reservation.
If the bill passes, the federal government would spend more than $170 million on the project. Officials with the Department of the Interior, however, say it's likely to exceed that estimate. The agency is also concerned that the project's costs don't justify the relatively small amount of water it would deliver. Nearly 1,800 Hualapai live on the reservation. The tribe operates the Grand Canyon Skywalk and says more than a million tourists visit the site every year. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the University of Tulsa College of Law's online Indian Law Master's Degree Program to help you work effectively in Indian Country. Spring application deadline is December 1st. More information at 844-573-3934.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Alaska has many sacred sites officially recognized by the federal government, ranging from petroglyphs on beaches in the southeast to Denali Peak in the south to portions of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or ANWR, as it's commonly referred to. The federal government's definition of sacred site comes from an executive order from President Bill Clinton. It means any specific location on federal land determined to be an appropriate representative of an established Indian religion. And further, the definition states, a representative of the community must tell officials that the site exists and why it's so important. And today we'll learn a little bit about a few areas that are sacred to Alaska Natives. And our phone lines are also open. If you have a comment about a sacred place in Alaska, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if there is a site that you have been working to protect, you can give us a ring. Maybe there's a site that nobody is doing anything about and you wish the speed would pick up on protecting it. Call in with that too. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. And now joining us from Anchorage, Alaska is Faith Gimmel. She's the Executive Director of Resisting Environmental Destruction on Indigenous Lands, or Red Oil. And Faith is Gwich'in, Pitt River, and Wintu. It's our pleasure to have her back on our program. Faith, thanks for being with us today.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Faith, also on the line with us, we have Princess Dajai Johnson on the line in Fairbanks, Alaska. She also works with Red Oil, too, and she comes to us from the Gwich'in Nation. It's also our pleasure to have Princess here with us as well. Princess, welcome to the hour.
Fun, Glindsay, everyone. Thanks for having me.
And ladies, it's our pleasure to take a moment and just look specifically at Alaska. A lot of times when we hear protecting sacred places across the nation, we hear from tribes in different parts of the country, many of which we've featured on the program, including areas in the Southwest. And something that seems to be a linking thing between all of these sacred places and tribes or individuals speaking up comes about protecting culture. So let's go ahead and start there. Faith, when we think about culture and sacred places, what would you like to share about the importance of just making sure sacred places, whether they be sacred to your nation or any other Native nation, is worth talking about?
Thank you. For us, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is a sacred place to us because it's a place that was put here by the Creator for the animals to perpetuate life. And in our language, we say Ijikwutungundaigodlit. It means the sacred place where life begins. And the porcupine caribou herd, that place is vital to the survival of this herd because that's their birthplace and nursery, which is the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The Gwich'in people and the caribou, our culture, our way of life, our spirituality is all interdependent with this herd. And so for us, protecting that area is vital to our cultural survival.
And when we do put in those terms, cultural survival, what do you think about when we talk about sacred places? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Princess, anything to add?
Well, I think that there's a broader context of what's happening. I'm a big fan of the poet Wendell Berry. And one of the things that I heard him say at one point is that there is only sacred land and then there's desecrated land. And I think the broader context of what we're looking at, especially when we see how things have really come to a head with the Dakota Access Pipeline, is we need to consider how we as human beings are going to treat our Mother Earth. And it's serious. We have got to transition off of fossil fuels. That is not to say that we do not have those very specific sacred sites. However, there is that broader picture. For too long, we have been desecrating the land and causing destruction and pollution. And this is going to have serious consequences and is already having serious consequences on all the living beings on this planet.
And so, Princess, when we do think about it in that context, is there anything more we can say about where some of these sites are located, especially focusing in there in Alaska and Anwar?
Tara, we call it the refuge, if you want to shorten it, because Anwar is getting away from it is a refuge, and that word is really important. And I think that, you know, by calling it, you know, Anwar, we kind of minimalize how significant this place is, and specifically the coastal plain. But when you have an entire intact ecosystem, a thriving ecosystem like that on the planet, such as we have, you know, in our oceans, in Brazil with the rainforest, it is so detrimental at this point that we protect those areas.
And I think that what leads a lot of people into action. Princess, do you have anything more?
No, I was just going to add that they provide these services that are keeping our planet alive at this point. And so, I believe that this paradigm shift is happening and that we are all part of this transformational movement, but there's a lot more that needs to happen from governments around the world and policy that needs to change.
All right. Thanks for that. And, you know, there are conversations going on in, the U.S. Capitol right now, the Tribal Nations Conference, White House Tribal Nations Conference. And it was interesting this morning to hear people speaking about this and consultation and working with tribes. And this Thursday, we're going to be taking a closer look at that, too. If this is something that is important to you, anything being mentioned on sacred places, definitely tune in and we'll be ready for your calls, too. And so, Faith, when we do think about the refuge, for people who have no concept of what it looks like, how big it is and what it comprises, set the scene for us a little bit more.
The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is 19 million acres, but the place we're concerned about is the coastal plain, which is the northern tip of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and there's 1.5 million acres that's basically been set aside by Congress as a study area to study whether there's enough recoverable oil there to develop the resources, or the wilderness values of this area are so important, this area should be protected forever. And this area has been in limbo for many years. We'll take an act of Congress to change the status of this place, and which a nation has fought for over 30 years to seek permanent protection of the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, because it's not only a birthplace for the 180,000 plus porcupine caribou herd. They migrate over 1,500 miles from their wintering grounds in Canada to give birth to their young there. But there's also 136 species of migratory birds that fly from all over the world to get to nest their young there. It's an important on-land denning area for polar bears. And so it's a vital ecosystem for all these different species that rely on this area to give birth to their young. It actually is a refuge for these species to perpetuate life. And it's a vital ecosystem. It's very beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places on Earth, especially when there's 180,000 caribou on the plain. Just imagine that. It's an amazing place. And the Goodspin have held since 1988 that we speak with one voice. There's 15 Gwich'in communities that are located along the migratory route of the porcupine caribou herd. We speak with one voice to seek permanent protection of this place. And we hope that Congress will hear the people and use their authority to actually protect this place once and for all. Because the reality in Alaska is this is a resource state. 95% of Alaska's coast on the North Slope is already open to oil and gas development.
And Faith, I'm going to put a pause on that, too, because I think this is a good spot to just reset. If somebody is tuning in today and you're wondering, what is it they're talking about? We're focusing in on sacred places. Both Faith and Princess are telling us more about the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and the importance it has not only to the ecosystem, but also making that connection to their own tribal nations, the Gwich'in Nation, and maybe you're a member too, and you know the significance of this place and maybe the importance to protect it. Anything you want to share, give us a ring. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. And Princess, when we do talk about threats, and Faith just mentioned places in the area being explored for oil, is there anything more you want to share about the threats that are that exist or that are on the books or in the pipelines when it comes to this area? What are you most concerned about threatening this sacred place?
Well, there's been ongoing threats, as Faith mentioned, throughout the 30-some years now that we've been trying to work at further protections. But currently, I believe Senator Murkowski has some legislation that would open the coastal plain up to development. There's always that threat. And in general, in Alaska, there are many threats, I believe, to development, not just oil and gas development, but mining, which also would have negative impacts to our native ways of life, which, you know, we're very blessed as Alaska Native people to continue to live off the land and animals, land animals and at sea as well. And maybe Faith can speak more eloquently to this, but, you know, we offshore, in terms of the offshore development, Shell is no longer in the oceans. However, there is a five-year plan that's up, and I think Faith can speak better to that. But in general, there are many threats of development in Alaska that could have negative impacts on our food security as Native people.
All right. Thank you for that, Princess. And anything you want to add, 1-800-996-2848. Faith, go ahead. Take it.
Well, just as Princess was saying, this is just one area under threat in Alaska. There's many areas under threat currently, whether it's from fossil fuel development or mining. And Alaska Native people are bearing the brunt of the impacts of climate change daily. There's places We just got done defeating Shell's proposed offshore development in the Chukchi Sea and the Beaufort Sea. And now there's more pressure on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or places like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The same story plays over and over throughout the state of Alaska, where Alaska Native peoples are defending subsistence use lands from any type of development, imposed development. And it's very vital for us to protect these areas because we live in isolated communities. We live a traditional-based lifestyle of hunting, fishing, gathering to survive up here. And we cannot rely on outside resources as much in our communities. Subsistence is a vital part of our way of life. Our food security is at threat when these companies, these multinational companies, try to access these areas that are very, very critical to our subsistence-based way of life. And at the same time, we're seeing all of these impacts from climate change, which is caused by humans. We cause climate change because of our dependence on fossil fuels. So it's time for people to take a look at that. Just as Princess said, it's time to shift the paradigm.
And so, sure. And Faith, I want to throw that out to our listening audience, too. What about that? Is climate change the biggest threat to a place that is important and significant to your tribal community? Share your thoughts, 1-800-996-2848. We have folks from the Resisting Environmental Destruction on Indigenous Lands, also known as Red Oil, on the line with us, and we're going to continue to hear more about sacred places in Alaska. We want to hear your voice, too. What is worth protecting in Alaska? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Ladies, we have a call on the line. Let's go ahead and say hello to Virgil in Little Eagle, South Dakota, tuned in on KLND. Virgil, thank you for giving us a ring, and what would you like to share?
And a good day to you guys out there. So I'm enjoying listening to this. I just got back from camp at the Strongheart Camp, part of the State Sacred Stone Camp, and been there for over a month. And all the folks that have been there, you know, resisting environmental change. I was up in Alaska a few years back. In fact, three times went up there for their Fairbanks powwow. And what a beautiful country. And I always look at the countrysides and wonder, what did they look like before European invasion? What was it like? And, you know, when we deal with these things throughout our country, our lands, as I tell the young people, Wakantanka, God, gave us these lands to watch. And we're doing the best that we can. And now we really need to lead the way with the change to in alternative energy. And, you know, it's possible. There's a documentary called Pump that people need to really take a look at, because our non-native relatives have no respect for our land. When they look at our land, they only see money, and they get very greedy. So when I look at where I am here in South Dakota, there used to be elk, there used to be bear, there used to be wolves. And this past summer, way up north in part of our country, there was a few wolverines that wandered into the northern part of North Dakota. And what did they do? They shot them right away. They killed them right away. So, you know, these are the things that we have an opportunity to teach the world, and especially our non-natives. There is a lot of non-natives coming down to the Sacred Stone Camp, and I don't know, I look at them and I wonder, where do these folks get their ideas from, and are they willing to listen and show respect rather than bringing their illegal drugs and all of their lifestyles into that camp? That really dumbfounds me. It makes me think about what are they doing. So when we talk about Alaska and the beautifulness, the wonders of Alaska, it was like that throughout our nation and our people. It was awesome. But I'll close with this thought. And only to the non-natives is it a wilderness? For us, as indigenous people to this land, those are our relatives, from the vegetation to the fish, to the water, to all of our oyate, the bears, whatever they are, they were provided. We only took what we needed, and in that manner, we existed. But it is getting really, it's beyond the point now where we really need to sit down with these non-natives and tell them what life is all about before it's all gone. And folks out there, I'm going to say this, and I want to implore everybody out there, it's election time, get out and vote. Get out, ask questions of these candidates so we will be able to get people in there that aren't controlled by corporations
and
by
know,
money.
Virgil, you said a lot, and I think when we do put it in context and taking a look at indigenous knowledge, just even indigenous knowledge and how we relate to the land, a lot is uncovered, and that's something we're hoping to do today, is bring some of this indigenous knowledge to our conversation, to hear just how deep some of these relationships go. And as you're hearing, Virgil there in Little Eagle, South Dakota, relating to this topic and hearing what these ladies from Alaska have to say, there is a lot to put on the table. And when we do talk about indigenous knowledge, a lot can be opened up. And how much more needs to be opened up in telling folks more about what our tribal nations connect to and why some of these places, and you see Native people standing up saying, need to be protected. We want to hear from you today. 1-800-99-NATIVE is the number. Virgil, thank you for giving us a ring. We're about to go to break here, but if you are interested in connecting with some of the folks on the line today, Faith, what is a good contact? All right, let's try Princess. Princess, where can people find more information on Red Oil?
Faith was just about to chime in. So.
All right, let's try her again. Are you there, Faith?
Our website is www.redoilak.org.
Okay, say that again because it was cutting out. All right, let's rework that line again. And folks, I'm sorry about that, but we will definitely have connections on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, after the hour if you would like to get in contact. But we're going to continue this conversation here right after our break. But folks, there are plenty of lines open waiting for you to share your thoughts on protecting sacred places around the nation. And although we're focusing in on Alaska, if you're relating to any of this and things you've done to make sure sacred places are protected, you can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. You can also send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We look forward to hearing your voice in this hour as well as on our social media. It's Native Vote Action Week. Are you registered to vote? Historically, Native Americans are less likely to register to vote or show up at the polls. But there's a push to get out the Native vote. On the next Native America Calling, we'll speak with experts about the importance of voting and how elections may affect our tribal nations.
As an American Indian or Alaska Native, there is one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native businesses. Exercise your right to vote for the candidates of your choice on November 8th. Your vote on Election Day makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Vote for our people, our land, and our future. Know your rights and go to NativeAmericaCalling.com for more information. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thanks for joining us. Each weekday, we sign on air to bring you closer to issues that are important to Indigenous people everywhere and the communities that they connect to. And we're on many great stations across the U.S., including KBRW in Barrow, Alaska, KYUK in Bethel, Alaska, and KCUK in Chivac, Alaska. And this hour, we also want you to share your thoughts on what you've heard so far. And while you're at it, visit our website, nativeamericacalling.com, and fill out a short survey on today's program and topic. We look forward to reading your responses. And the spotlight, as we said, is on sacred places in Alaska today. And if you have an area near your village or community that is sacred, are you struggling to protect it? Give us a call and share your thoughts. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And what exactly are you protecting it from? And you can also post your thoughts on Facebook or send us a tweet. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us on the line today from Fairbanks, Alaska, is Princess Dajai Johnson. And she works with the Resisting Environmental Destruction on Indigenous Lands, also known as Red Oil. And she comes to us from the Gwich'in Nation. Also on the line in Anchorage, Alaska, is Faith Gemmel. She is the Executive Director of Red Oil, and she is Gwich'in, Pitt River, and Wintu. It's our pleasure to welcome both of these ladies back into the hour. And the phone lines are ringing, so we look forward to bringing in more voices. Your voice is missing. Pick up the phone. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848. We're going to go to Roger now in White Mountain, Alaska, tuned in on KOTZ. Roger, thank you for reaching out, and go ahead, share your thoughts.
Before Alaska became a territory of the United States in the early 1860s, it was owned by Moscow, Russia. Today, with 44 million acres in regional corporations, wherever a tribe lived, that was land. That land is and was sacred because that was where we gathered our food. Those lands were and still are our grocery store. They always say in the Western culture, without land, you are nothing. I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that, Roger. There in White Mountain, Alaska. Again, our phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. And Faith, any reaction to Roger's comment?
I agree with Roger. Before statehood, before various acts that were implemented here in Alaska, Alaska was owned by Alaska Natives. And in my opinion, it still is because some of those acts were not legitimate, such as the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act, which was passed in 1971 without the vote of Alaska Natives. And to this day, I would contend that we put it back on the table in Congress and let Alaska Natives actually have a say about our lands because we still own Alaska.
And Faith, just for folks, we had technical difficulties before the break there in connecting with Red Oil. Go ahead, give out that website.
It's redoilak.org.
Okay. And Faith, before we move to hear about other sacred places, anything more you would like to share about oil drilling and connecting it to the refuge?
It's just that up here in Alaska, we see so many territories under threat right now. And it's not just here in Alaska, it's all across the United States at the national level. Look at what's happening in Standing Rock. We actually went to Standing Rock to show solidarity with the people there because they're protecting their sacred lands, their treaty lands, and their treaty rights. That's what these issues are about. It's not just about sacred places, but it's about our culture, our way of life, and about our rights as Indigenous people, our rights to continue to live and be who we are with our unique and distinct cultures intact. And if for us to continue to live our ways of life and be who we are as Indigenous people, our lands have to remain intact because our rights and our environment are inseparable. And right now, there's a call by people all across the United States to keep fossil fuels in the ground. In order for us to stave off the worst impacts of climate change at this time, we have to promote legislation to keep fossil fuels in the ground in order to take the pressure off of the earth, because we're taking too much too fast.
And, you know, when we talk about some of this, too, a lot of people go the route. If a place is something that is connected to a tribal community, a place that some people say are sacred, it's even in the terms when we look at legislation, or these places that are just sacred places. Often people turn to the route of getting it protected by the federal government. And folks, I'd like you to comment on that. What about taking that route to back up what Indigenous people already know about community places that are sacred, and having them being recognized and protected under the federal government? What happens when we take that route? Anything you want to say about that? If you want to challenge that, you can call in too. 1-800-996-2848. And ladies, I want to go ahead and go to a voice that we had a chance to connect with earlier this month. Rosita Worrell is Tlingit, and she's also the president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. She's been working to protect sacred sites in Alaska for 45 years. And our senior producer, Monica Breen, spoke with her about sites that are sacred to the Tlingit, Tsimshian, and Haida nations. She says she struggled with how to talk about these places.
You know, I will tell you that I really struggled with trying to figure out what should I tell the public about our sacred sites, because they're, you know, they're sacred beliefs, and we were always concerned that non-Native people might go there and disturb the sites. But then I figured out that I have to tell the public why they are sacred to us, because number one, they do not understand why they are sacred. Non-Native people, you know, they have churches that they consider sacred, but then they could also deconstruct the sacredness of the church. We cannot do that. And they just don't understand it. So I really do believe it's important to educate the public why these sites are sacred. And I think this discussion is so timely considering what our Dakota brothers and sisters are going through. But, you know, what I finally had to come out and tell Native people, non-Native people, is that sacred sites, and they're really, it's really much more than the site, the specific sites. They're actually sacred landscapes. They're broader than, you know, what you might put on a map as a sacred site. But actually, we've had to struggle to show people that the sacredness extends to a larger, you know, adjacent areas. But what happens is that the spirits of our ancestors reside or inhabit these sacred sites. And I know non-Native people don't believe this, because the spirit of their family members or their ancestors go to heaven or they go elsewhere. So we always have to try to tell them why these sites are sacred to us, and try to get them to understand, you know, our belief systems, which are very different from theirs.
What are some areas that you're particularly concerned about in terms of being in danger?
Well, we have one site that we actually were able to select under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And 40 years later, we still don't have this site. And it's right outside of Sitka. And it's called Kuna but non-Native people refer to it as Redoubt, Redoubt Lake, and I guess the Russians came in and used that site. But it's a very sacred landscape to us, and our great concern is, well, we've actually had to go to court trying to fight for ownership of that, even though the federal government, they've gone through their process. It was recognized as a sacred site under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, but then it was challenged by people who wanted to maintain that sacred site in public ownership. And they wanted to be assured that they could continue to use that site for recreation, to use it for their fisheries. And we, on the other hand, wanted to protect the sacredness of that site. We actually, you know, went to Congress, tried to get 4,000 acres to select our sacred sites. We were whittled back down to 70 sites in this last legislation.
And again, you just heard from Rosita Wuerl from the Tlingit Nation, also president of the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. What's your reaction to what you just heard? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. We're going to go now to Judith Ramos. She's also in Anchorage, Alaska, and she's an assistant professor in the Department of Alaska Native Studies in Rural Development at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She is Tlingit, and it's our pleasure to welcome her into the hour. Judith, thank you for being with us, and feel free to further introduce yourself.
All right, thank you. Gnashish. Nakhutsuyu Hatu Asak, Yesna Yahat, Tiskuhiri Yahat, Kashkwan, Sutnakhati Yati Yahat, Tekwidi Dashkanayat. Thank you. I just said my name is Judith Ramos. I'm Kashkwan from the Owl House. I'm the daughter of the Koho, and I'm the granddaughter of the Bear Clan. So I just wanted to mention the site. Quashk is an actual place in my community. It's the site of the humpback salmon creek from Yakutat. Thank you.
And Judith, thank you for being with us. And when we think about speaking up and voicing why these certain places are important to our tribal communities, we heard Rosita talk a little bit about that. I'd like you to pick up on that in talking about some of these places. And earlier we read the definition of what a sacred site is via the federal government. And it also talks about disclosing why a place is important. How does that sit with you, that you have to describe this in order to get it protected?
Yeah, I think that's problematic. And from what I've talked about my elders, that we believe everything is sacred because one of the things that in my area, there was a gold mining company. They said they discovered about $34, $35 million, and it was at the site of a cosmology's place where Raven opened the Box of Daylight, just a few miles south of our village. And we were really concerned about this gold mining company coming in and mining right in the middle of the where Raven was part of our cosmology and beliefs. And this is many stories. This is from my father's homeland, and it's a very beautiful, pristine place. It's part of a World Heritage Site. It has international significance, yet we felt kind of helpless because this mining company was protected under the 1872 mining laws, and we could not protect this sacred site from mining. But we were lucky that they discovered they were lying about the actual value of the gold in that area, and the company declared bankruptcy. But we were really quite upset that there was nothing we could do to protect that area because it was not protected under any laws that we could use.
And Judith, when we do mention laws that do protect sites, is there anything more you want to say about legal avenues? Maybe one doesn't exist, but it looks like it's time to create one. Anything you want to share about legal avenues tribes can pursue to protect sites in Alaska and kind of anywhere?
Well, I did work with Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation to identify sacred sites. So they had to actually work with them to go back to Congress to get some of these sites identified and to get go through Congress action to get them protected. But, you know, it takes a long time to do that. And in the meantime, there's a lot of issues, a lot of concerns we're facing in Southeast because of potential mining. And the mining is not actually coming from U.S. It's becoming mining from Canada. And the mining pollution is flowing down through these, we call them transboundary rivers, including our homeland. And so it's the tribe has been trying to work work through this, the State Department to try and protect our rivers from mining on the other side of the border. It's not even in within U.S. borders. So there's a lot of you know, ways that we cannot protect our homelands because of not even existing laws, but you know, pollution coming from other countries. So yeah, and part of the problem with the sacred heritage sites is you know, we believe everything is sacred, so it's not actually a site because we don't worship at specific sites, and we're a lot of our ceremonies are working because we have the sacred relationship with the animals. So a lot of our ceremonies and beliefs are related to animals and not just sites.
And that kind of goes back to what the ladies were talking about specifically in taking a look at the refuge. Judith, I'd like you to talk, if you can, when we do talk about ways to protect sacred places. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act mentions sacred sites. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that plays into what people are doing today?
There were a lot of sacred sites selected under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, but it was the federal agencies had to go out and investigate these sites, and they had to find what he called material evidence of these sites. And there were some sites they could not find, you know, material evidence. And we found out that some of the sites in our area, they were going in the middle of winter and looking for it. And so that, and it took so long to process, you know, as Rosita said, to go through and identify these sites and process that, and it was kind of restrictive. So it was really hard to get these sites protected because of the amount of time it took to do it. And then that they have to have this proof that there was occupation or use of the area that had to have material evidence. So there were some of the problems we had trying to identify a lot of the sites. And when I was working to try to identify, I found a lot more sites that were not even identified. Working with federal agencies, they didn't have the people to go out with me and identify these sites to find the so-called material evidence of use and occupancy of the sites. So much of it is based on oral traditions. So that is a lot of restrictive boundaries that I found when I was working on identifying sacred sites.
And Judith, just being a tribal member, is that frustrating that, you know, the knowledge is oral, but yet you have these laws and they want physical evidence? How does it make you feel, or how did it make you feel knowing, you know, if you don't have one, you don't have the other?
It's very frustrating because, as I said, I am Kashkaquan, and that comes from an actual place, a physical place. It's a creek, and we have oral tradition dating back hundreds of years. I am working with a National Science Foundation grant to combine oral history with science. So a lot of the oral history we identified, trying to go out and identify these sites, and we did actually find a lot of these sites that was based on oral tradition, but there's a different way of seeing the world as I see it, because this is who I identify of who I am. I'm from this clan. I'm from this place. This is the cosmology of who I am, and it's my, as I call it, my cosmology of our tribe. And so it's very sacred to us because that's who we are and that's who we identify with. So each of the tribal people really closely identified with a place in their oral traditions, and every tribe has stories about where they come from and who they are. So these sites are more than just that. It's identifying as who you are as a person, as a tribe, as a clan.
And Judith, what kind of pushback do you get either from agencies or do people who are working to protect sacred places? What kind of pushback happens? Go ahead.
I have a lot of issues because there was a site I was trying to protect. It was a very ancient site and it was being trespassed by sports fishermen. They were, you know, building trails and catering to the sports fishermen because that's where they get the money from. And so I had to really fight with them and stop them. And they finally did close off the trail where the sports fishermen were going on the sacred village site. And, you know, one time I went by there and there was trash there. They were knocking down the signs that said no trespassing here, and those are thrown in the river. So, you know, it's really frustrating for me to go on and keep working with them because they don't get their money from us. You know, their money comes from the tourists or things like that, and they, you know, so it is really, I found it very frustrating trying to protect some of these sites in my community.
And so, Judith, to continue this work, what's important? What do you want to leave people with to understand more about the work that's being done to protect sacred places, sacred heritage sites? Anything you want to leave us with, Judith?
Yeah, I think that the tribes really, you know, need to set up their own, like, tribal codes, try to set up their own people to go out and monitor and protect these sites, and work within the tribe to, you know, have identify people that can go out and be tribal, their own tribal managers over their own lands. And I guess I'm unlucky. Sea Alaska is trying to get legal authorities some of those sites so we can actually, at the tribal level, go out and try and protect these sites.
All right. Thank you for that. And I want to bring back Faith Gimmel for any final comments. We've covered a lot of ground today. Faith, anything you want to leave us with?
Just that the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, every person in the United States has a say what happens to this area because it is a federal national wildlife refuge, and it would take an act of Congress to protect it permanently or to open it up to oil and gas development. And the Gwich'in, we believe that it is sacred, and we want permanent protection of this area. We've been fighting for 30 years against all the multinational oil companies. And I think that the reason we've been successful in holding off the development is because of our spiritual foundation in fighting this fight.
All right. Thank you for that. Faith Gimmel, thank you for being with us today. Princess Dajar. Johnson, or Dajai Johnson, sorry about that. Any final comments?
Yeah, I think it's especially important for Alaskans to, you know, please stand in solidarity with us and in protecting the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And you can write our senators, our representatives. You can go to wearethearctic.org, and there's a petition that you can sign. And I would just say, you know, put a call out there. You know, you see somebody in your town's doing a solidarity, stand in solidarity with Standing Rock, you know, add your voice, you know, physically, you know, go out there spiritually, you know, just asking for prayers for our Mother Earth right now. And all of us combined, there's a huge movement going on. And there's many ways that we protect areas, whether it be through wilderness protection, sacred sites, monument designations. Our Hawaiian relatives just got a huge marine monument. I can't pronounce it, Papahano Manaakea, I think. And this is a good thing. These are all beautiful things. Virgil and Roger hit the nail on the head, though, with, you know, we need to shift to alternative energies. We need to educate non-Native people. We need to share our indigenous knowledge right now. And all life is sacred. All land is sacred. All animals are sacred. It's that interconnectedness. And our indigenous worldview is really what is needed right now. If we're going to have a planet for our future generations.
All right. And with that, we're going to close out the hour here. And again, folks, if there is a sacred area in Alaska, whether it be a place, whether it be a place that's significant to your heritage, and you still want to share information on it, please reach out to us. You can find us at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. That's our email. Or you can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we're also looking for your thoughts in a survey that we have on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. Hop online, go to our website, and fill out a short survey on today's program and topic. We look forward to hearing your responses. And again, if you would like to reach out to us, we're also on Facebook. And I do appreciate everybody who added their voice to this hour, including Rosita Wuerl for speaking with us about Alaska sacred places. And also thanks to our guests, Princess Johnson, Faith Gemmel, and Judith Ramos. It's our pleasure to hear what is important to you and what you're working on. Tomorrow, speaking of voting, we are back with a show about voter registration. If there's anything you have to say about that, start the conversation right now. Online, leave your comments at nativeamericacalling.com. And thanks to the Native America Calling crew, our executive producer Art Hughes, senior producer Monica Brain, associate producer Andy Murphy, and engineer Roman Garcia. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. It has been a pleasure to think about this subject and get ready for the rest of the week. We look forward to hearing your voice sometime in the future. And again, visit us online, nativeamericacalling.com. We'll be back tomorrow.
Support by the very first Indigenous Comic-Con in Albuquerque, New Mexico, November 18th through the 20th, featuring Indigenous creators, illustrators, writers, designers, actors, and producers from the worlds of comic books, games, sci-fi, fantasy, film, TV, and graphic novels. Indigenous Comic-Con seeks to highlight the amazing work and bring understanding about the Indigenous experience to the world of popular culture. Info on Facebook or at indigenouscomiccon.com. Everyone is welcome. Support for this program provided by the University of Tulsa College of Law, offering a 100% online master's degree program in Indian law. This degree can move your career forward and help you work effectively in Indian country. Deadline for spring application is December 1st. Info at law.utulsa.edu/MJIL.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.